This week on the Design Review, we talk about principles and how to start your next big project on the right foot.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Design Review. My name is Jonathan and with me is Chris. This week, we're going to be talking about design ethics, and usually I'm the one who won't shut up about this, but Chris has put together a really great episode, so I'm going to be with you, the audience, and kind of reacting to this, and then we're going to dive as deep into this as we can.
Yeah, so I wanted to have, originally I wanted to have a broader discussion of ethics, because it's definitely been something that's been on my mind recently, as I've been looking for my next job. I sort of got laid off a little while ago, so I need a job. Hint, hint, if you're hiring, please hire me. And I thought it would be good to talk to you about it, John, because obviously you wrote an incredible book called Tragic Design that is dealing with this topic very much. And ethics certainly has come to the forefront in the past few months with all the things happening in the world. But instead of just sort of having a general discussion, I thought maybe to frame today's show, I should focus this topic on this idea of principles and using principles in design. So leading a design project with principles is not something that I think a lot of people talk about very much, because it's not really one of like the quote-unquote hard skills that designers sort of have to use constantly to kind of get things done. When we think about like kind of the hard skills of designers, right? It's like getting into like Photoshop or Sketch or Figma and like moving things around and drawing rectangles, right? Those are basically like the things that designers do. But in actuality, using principles in your design is basically how we can start to reinforce a lot of the ethical things and ethical responsibilities that we have as creators of products. And so to kind of like back this up with maybe a practical example, is that when I worked on the voice UI for Mercedes, I actually developed a set of 10 principles that we use to guide us throughout the design process. By creating these 10 principles, and not that I just created them out of nothing. I mean, they were based on research and sort of common practices and things. By creating these 10 principles, basically I had something that I could use, to help explain the rationale behind the work that we were doing anytime we had to get into like some kind of discussion or workshop with different people.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've seen from how important principles can be to a project is that they really help align the team when it comes to difficult decisions.
Yeah.
You know, because I've also seen, you know, some people put principles, over a project that are just obvious things that you would want to do anyway, like having good UX or, something very broad, like, you know, make it as easy for the user as possible. It's like, okay, well, why? What does that mean? You know, you have to bring it in the context of the difficult decisions you're going to have to make as a team or as a designer or for the project. And hopefully they're also based off of research, which we've talked about recently.
Yeah. What I have prepared today is like a whole rundown of all these different things that we can talk about and how we use principles and things like that. So to kick this off, the first question basically is, why are principles important? And we've sort of talked about this already, but to put it simply, whether we are actually conscious of them or not, principles are often the things that guide the work that we do, right? So if you've ever looked at a mobile app UI and thought, boy, those buttons look too small. They should be larger so that it's easier for people to tap on those buttons. Guess what? You just used a principle to make a decision about a particular piece of design, right? And the principle in question there is Fitt's law. But, this idea that you can just say, like, quickly size up an interface and say, okay, that thing should be larger so it's easier to use. I mean, that's a principle that you've just used to kind of make that decision. And so to put it another way, like, understanding principles, it helps us do our jobs, right? It helps us be better designers, basically, because it helps like seed the rationale for some kind of design concept.
And so with ethics, is that is this something that we also need to kind of start to weave into these principles? I mean, is that where we're headed with this? Like, is that something yeah. that you're suggesting, is that, you know, in order to make really good decisions, you need to have them explicit as a principle?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the reason why I mentioned, like, doing this with the voice UI was I actually, you know, circulated this among the people I was working with. I made, like, a big poster, hung it up around the office. The idea was to make these things visible so that we were, like, sort of living the principles that we set forth, and tried to share them, because this was how, I mean, exactly as you mentioned, like, this was how we were able to, like, arbitrate a lot of decision making. We could like literally point at something on the wall and say, this is, you know, the reason for doing this is that thing right there, you know, and it says this. And like I said, I mean, I think this is not something that a lot of people do, you know, because it's sort of like hidden design work that happens, I think, behind the scenes. And I know, you know, personally, in the past, I've probably just sort of like internalized principles, and thinking about principles, like, I've just sort of internalized that kind of stuff. But, there's something that happens, I think, when you write them down and share them with people, that it's sort of like, it sort of makes it, not just that it makes it real, but it becomes an interesting discussion point.
No, I think there's something to that. Like, there's something about writing it down explicitly and even giving it a title.
Yep.
A label, if you will, that is memorable in some way, that really gives it a lot more authority than, you know, you're in a session with your team and you're saying, no, I really think, you know, on this screen that we should make that button bigger. And they're not, you know, getting at this, you know, they're saying, oh, well, you know, we need more space for this or that. And it becomes this really big circular conversation that goes on and on and on. And it's your, you know, but for some reason, if you put it down on a piece of paper on the wall or in the project brief somewhere that says, you know, that, you know, this is our principle, that and then your decision matches to that, it really does give it a lot more sway and a lot more power. Like, I saw that in a lot of the companies that I worked at in the past, where explicitly writing out those principles in the beginning, people would call it out during the meeting. Well, aren't, you know, like, for example, I remember one of them at Intuit. When I was working there, I was working on these sales tax forms for the QuickBooks tool that they had. And with that, you know, accuracy was really, really, really important versus speed. Right. And we would see that over and over again in the research. And so we had to make that a principle, because over and over again, we'd get on these, like, bunny path, you know, bunny trail conversations around, like, what should we do here to make it really easy? And it's like, no, we need to make it as, you know, as accurate as possible. So sometimes that means, like, three more steps versus one step.
Right.
So yeah, it does give it a lot of power, just giving it a title and a description and putting it out there in the world. And the same thing for ethics. You know, if one of your principles is an ethics related thing, you know, if you can state that in the beginning, you can point to that over and over again. And for some reason, it really gives a lot more sway versus you saying it in the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing, is connecting principles to ethics is probably, like, kind of the key behind all of it, right? Because, you know, there's things like dark patterns that exist, right? And I think in design, we're all aware of dark patterns, or at least we sort of know what they are, and for the most part, probably try to resist using them as much as possible. But the reason dark patterns exist is because we know that they work. Right. And we know that we can trick people into doing things that they probably, you know, fundamentally don't want to do. And so the question is, like, you know, if you're going to have principles around, like, not using dark patterns, what about other things like accessibility or, you know, any number of things that help a product be more ethical, right? And sort of respectful of, like, you know, just other things. And to me, I think using principles is basically translating ethics into some sort of plan of action, right? Where, you know, sometimes ethics can be a little large and broad and maybe like a little bit too difficult to, like, turn into something that people can do. You know, if you think about sort of in the sort of grand scheme of things.
Aspect of that, you know, that we talk about in Tragic Design is that it's really hard to make those ethical decisions, especially the ones that are in that really difficult gray area that maybe it's not immediately clear whether it's wrong or right, or just at the moment you don't have the strength to speak up. So having it clearly defined before those decisions and that type of conversation comes up really helps you to make the right decision in the moment and as a team.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because obviously, you know, every company you work at, there will be some gray areas. And there are some companies that are sort of, you know, certain social media companies, let's say, that, you know, are maybe crossing ethical lines that you don't want to cross. But not every company is like that, where, you know, maybe they're doing things that are somewhat questionable. But at least if you can define some principles for what you want to accomplish with the design of a product, you can start sort of working your way towards being more ethical. So maybe the next question then is, like, well, you know, if you've never done this before, what principles should I be using in my project? And I think, unfortunately for you, if you're asking that question, unfortunately, I don't think we can actually be that prescriptive, because I think it kind of depends, right? It's the common, like, answer that designers give, right? It depends.
But I think we can say a little bit of what not to do, like,
I have a whole bunch of things we can talk about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we've discussed a lot of different principles on past episodes. So something you can do right now is, if you're curious, you can go listen to all of our previous episodes and get some idea. But here's some things that maybe can help you right now to get started. So the first thing to ask yourself is, like, what is it that you're actually designing towards, right? So each type of product that you're designing for probably has some kind of core set of principles that help define what it is. So let's say you're designing an analytics service, right? So you're trying to make dashboards or something. Well, there's already a whole bunch of principles out there that can help you do that. Like, for example, around data visualization, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there. And you can actually go look up a whole bunch of existing experts in whatever field that is. So, you know, if it's analytics, there's a bunch of literature already out there. Chances are those people have, you know, written blog posts or written books or white papers that you can read to get an understanding of kind of the big principles behind the work that you need to do, right? So that's one thing.
Never underestimate the power of Googling it, you know, like,
yeah.
sometimes we really forget that, like, there's all so much out there. So, like, you know, sometimes I'll send a friend a link, you know, that's, there's this website called Let Me Google That For You.
Yeah.
And what happens on the person's end that you send this link to is that it takes them to google.com, writes out their search query, which is usually the question they asked you, and then presses enter and takes them to Google search results. So yeah, definitely leverage that. Like, just, you know, sometimes it's maybe the first step is finding the right terms, like, oh, okay, data visualization, you know, information architecture, you know, and kind of discovering those terms, and then you can start to research a little bit and finding out what you're designing towards.
Yeah. So the next thing is like, who actually needs the product that you're working on? So this gets back to kind of understanding the customer here. So knowing more about the people that are going to use the product, obviously is a good thing in general. But it can also help you figure out what kinds of principles you'll need to consider. So for example, like some of the projects that I worked on at Mercedes, we knew that the target customer was actually a much older demographic than, you know, kind of the typical like mobile phone app type of thing. And so as a result, that meant thinking about designs that accommodate the needs of people that are in a much, much older like age group. And a lot of it had to do actually with like accessibility and how do we assist people, who might have like vision impairments or like hearing impairments or, like physical impairments that like make it difficult to, use touchscreens and things like that. So, you know, if you're designing for a certain kind of audience, you know, there's the more you know about those people, the more likely it is that you can sort of understand what sort of principles can define the work that helps them, right? So again, like UX research here is probably the best option, right? So aligning the design of your product with customers is like important in general, but it's also important because it helps you define principles. And we just did a show on research, so you can also listen to that to sort of get started. The next sort of question is like, well, what kinds of technologies impact the solution? So each thing you do is sort of impacted by different technologies, right? So let's say you're making an AR app for the iPhone. You know, you'll need to understand kind of the fundamental principles of interaction with augmented reality, right? And if you're, you know, if you're making like just like standard mobile apps, there's already like a lot of established principles, like I mentioned Fitt's Law earlier. But, you know, AR is a newish sort of technology. And there might be already some interesting principles around like how to design for applications that involve like physical space and you know, like physical, like, you know, reach and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
similar to like the first question, I mean, there's probably a lot of existing books and literature about these different technologies. And again, like just Googling it, you can sort of learn about this stuff, spend a bit of time just kind of familiarizing yourself with the various technologies that are out there.
Yeah, one quick note on this one that I've stumbled into more often than I'd like to admit is that, you know, because I think you mentioned a lot of these really great technologies, but sometimes the technology principles you might need are related to the different, the variety of devices that are out there.
Right.
A lot of designers and companies forget about, especially the Android market, where there's a lot of different, sizes, you know, both, you know, and we're talking about physical screen sizes. So,
right.
And then, you know, there's a lot of variation there on like how it actually renders. And so,
right.
Their wonderfully designed screen doesn't look good on the iPhone SE or doesn't look good on, you know, this smaller, you know, Motorola device that that they didn't think about. So, you know, thinking about, okay, you know, and earlier you talked about who, so that might influence, you know, what technology you might need to be thinking about and then the principles that are related to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, there's especially in Android, right? There's like budget Android phones that probably have like not the greatest displays. Like more.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this one doesn't have Touch ID, so we can't use that here. Yeah.
Or you know, the new thing is like folding displays, right? So like displays that are like could be double wide or whatever now. So you know, there's all kinds of different considerations outside of, you know, typical iOS type stuff.
That there finally will be a fold you can actually talk about, and it'll be that'll be real. Is this above or below the fold?
Yeah. I mean, I've always said, like, any phone could be folded at least once.
And only once.
It may not have been designed to do that, but you can at least fold it once. So, the last sort of general thing is, like, you know, what if what you're working on is something that's, like, actually really brand new? And this does happen from time to time, even if you're not really working in R&D as I did. You sometimes get the opportunity in whatever company it is to, like, explore something kind of newish. And so what do you do? One of the key things that we often did was just simply to go back to kind of the fundamentals of, like, design and usability. So we looked, anytime we had, like, a bigger, broader topic that was kind of newish, I often looked at, for example, things like Nielsen's usability heuristics. And we did a whole series of shows on that. There's 10 usability heuristics written out by Jacob Nielsen that have kind of stood the test of time for many decades. And these are a great starting point for developing principles of user experience for kind of new, anything new. If you haven't looked into those things, or even if you've looked into them and not looked into them for a while, that's a good starting point. I also think information architecture is also another great topic to consider here. When you're setting off to define kind of a newish thing, just having good principles around information architecture actually can help you sort of already orient the design of a product in the right direction before you've even made any screens.
I would add to this, because when I worked in healthcare, that was so new and actually felt a little bit kind of R&D, because when you'd search things, there just wasn't a lot out there. And so one thing I would really encourage is to reach out, you know, to people. So find people on the internets, you know, LinkedIn or social media or something that are doing this thing or a related thing, and see if you can get them on the phone. I was so surprised at how many people in design healthcare that I was able to get on the phone just by, like, you know, just DMing people over and over again, you know, like a Stanford lead UX designer, you know, things like that. And just seeing, like, hey, how do you deal with getting research participants who are in treatment, you know, things like that, like some really difficult questions. So if you can't find it on the internet, then, you know, really move to those one-on-one conversations.
Right. Professional networks.
Yeah. So invaluable.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you've gone through all this stuff and you come up with a whole bunch of things. Now that you have all this stuff, I mean, what the heck do you even do now?
And that's the show.
Yeah, I don't know. No, luckily for you, I wrote down a whole bunch of things. So the first thing, as we've already talked about, the first thing to do is write them all down and just look at them all. Chances are you've collected a whole bunch of different things. If you've done all this research, just write it all down, you know, and take a look at them. Once you've written it all out, prioritize. And I know this is, like, kind of scary, because you've spent all this time researching all this stuff, collected all this great information on, you know, who the customer is, what are they interested in, what do they need, what is the product, what is all this technology, what does it all mean? And now I'm asking you to kind of eliminate some of these things. And, like, well, yeah, you kind of do, because you can't really, you know, if you have, like, 40 different principles, it can be very difficult to, like, make decisions when you have too many things that are, you know, possibly even competing with each other, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of narrow it down, just so that you have something, some basis for the start of a project. And this is very important, because All the decisions you're making here are basically critical for framing the product and helping the product basically start off as kind of a more ethical kind of product. One of the key things that you can focus on when prioritizing is really using the customer research that you've done, right? So, you know, if you need to make a decision between one principle or another, I would suggest very highly to go back to what the customer needs, right? If it's going to be a decision between technology and people, I tend to sort of like bias towards people because
yeah, and it's the very defendable.
Yeah,
it's very defendible. You know, if you're talking, if there's an argument and you're trying to make, again, this is, principles are made for these arguments. And I don't mean arguments in the sense that there's animosity, but right. just that there's two arguments that are competing and
discussion.
You're trying to figure out what, yeah, discussion. User research has a lot of sway, has a lot of strength because you're talking about the source, you know?
Yeah.
There might be, you know, some interpretation to that, but at the end of the day, if you can base it off of the user research, you can, you know, in your principles, maybe have some verbatim quotes to build that empathy and really help people to quickly understand. That's going to be really powerful in driving that point home for yourself and for your team.
Yeah. The other thing that I've found has happened sometimes is when you've done all this work, you know, you'll just find sometimes that certain things will just naturally float up in importance. And it's either because, you know, 8 out of 10 people keep saying this is really important to me or whatever, right? Like you'll look into maybe some technology and find like, okay, certain things just sort of have to be there because that's how, technically certain things work. You'll just find that certain things, like sometimes the prioritization basically happens naturally is what I'm saying. So sometimes the decision is maybe a little bit easier than just sort of like excluding certain stuff. But prioritization is very important. So once you've prioritized and you've come up with kind of a list of stuff, the most critical things, the next thing to do is share them with your coworkers. You know, especially in this time, if you spent a bunch of time researching to develop principles, chances are you have a bunch of people who are very antsy and expecting to see a bunch of screens by now. Right?
Which we talked about in the productivity episode, which yeah. you should check out last episode.
It's like, what do you mean you've been researching? where's my rectangles?
So you wrote out a couple principles? What is this?
It's okay actually to not have done all that, as long as you can talk about the principles you've learned to be able to like drive the design forward, right? Like talk about this with your coworkers, right? Like, yeah, I didn't make a bunch of screens because I was trying to understand the principles behind the work I was doing, and these are the things that I've come up with.
We talked about this in the last episode too. Making your work visible is so important. So, you know, obviously you want to share with your coworkers so that they're aligned with you, but also so that, you know, your work becomes visible and all throughout the process, they're not surprised at your final conclusion and they can provide feedback, you know, earlier in your process. So maybe you're sharing your principles that you're about to base a whole project off of.
Yeah.
And maybe they disagree. Maybe they have some really good points. And you really need to align with your team on that as soon as possible. So sharing is huge.
Yeah. Talk about it like, you know, this is what we research. These are the things we've learned. And these are the principles that I discovered will be important for making design decisions, right? And then you get feedback on it because you want your coworkers to buy in, right? You want product management to buy into these principles. You want engineering to buy into these principles. And you don't want just like a tacit, like, yeah, whatever, fine, do whatever you want. You know, like you want them to understand and like agree so that you know, you're developing what you're doing is basically developing the basis for all of everything else that's going to happen down the road. You know, if you show this to people and they disagree with these principles, it's going to be incredibly difficult to get buy-in on everything else you do after the fact, right? If they don't agree that, you know, fundamentally the product should be accessible. Well, how are they going to accept when you're pushing back on like adding alt tags to images, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fundamentally they're not going to do that, right? So if you can get people to agree that accessibility is important, then yeah, adding alt tags to images just becomes like a natural result of that, right?
Yeah, thinking about it from your teammates' perspective, right. Like they need to know what to expect, what to plan for, what to
correct,
what to promise, and things like that. So yeah. it only helps your team stay in lockstep with you.
Yeah. Now chances are, and this has been based on my experience as well, chances are even if you get agreement on principles, people may still disagree with some of the decisions you've made and some of the details in the design. But that's okay. That's normal. And the benefit is, you actually now have a basis for a discussion because you can say, well, the reason why I made this decision was because of these, you know, four principles here. You know, can we talk about like why you think this is not fulfilling that, or why, you know, something else might be better or whatever. And that's like a very productive kind of discussion to have, right?
Yeah.
And so, okay, so once you got feedback, you probably, you know, you maybe add a few things, you change certain things, whatever. Now that you have them, print them out, hang them up, give them to everybody that's working on the product, you know, whatever. Just like share them, make sure everyone has a copy of everything. You know, laminate. I mentioned that I made a poster and hung it up. Well, you know, can't really do that these days since everyone's kind of working from home.
I mean, send them some physical mail with your
yeah.
principles laminated and
right.
cleaned.
but yeah, I mean, like I said, like there's other ways to document this stuff. The key thing is you want these to be kind of reminders for everyone. So, you know, make them visible as best you can. You know, put it into your project documentation. So, you know, however you're documenting, you know, hopefully you're documenting your projects, right?
Yes, which means like, you know, you have a slideshow, you have a document, like literal document right. that you're putting all this in. So I, if you don't do that or your company doesn't require you to do that, still do it. It's very helpful to have this single source of truth.
Yeah.
And your principles can be right there at the top.
Yeah. You know, in the work we did at Mercedes, we used like Confluence basically to do our project documentation. I always created a page specifically just for design principles. And it was something I could like email to people and get feedback on. We could do sort of inline discussions and things right there in the tool.
You can even pin them up behind you in your video calls, you know, just...
Yeah, make it a Zoom
background.
So you
can be able to point, yeah, make it a Zoom background. So you can be like, I think we talked about this at the beginning of the project. Here's the principle. And just point to it like Vanna White.
Yeah. You know, put them in your presentations to management. You know, before you even get into like, you know, if you're presenting to executives, you know, don't just present them the work. Like, start with like talking about principles, you know. You know, yeah, basically really just put them everywhere you can.
Yeah, I mean, it really does help. I mean, if we're talking about just, you know, the influence you're going to have as a designer, you know, aside from ethics and then all these other positive things that it does, it helps to helps the people that you're speaking to trust the work that you're doing. Because if you've established principles, it also establishes that you're thinking principally throughout the rest of the project, which increases their trust that you're headed in the right direction. You're doing a good job. So, you know, it's a win-win situation.
Yeah. You know, I didn't actually try this myself, but it just occurred to me since everyone's working from home, like, you know, if you could pay a skywriter to like fly around and write it in the sky, that'd be kind of cool. It would take forever, I would think, to write like 10 principles, but
yeah, and maybe not here in California currently because there's a lot of other smoking stuff up there. Oh, man.
So, yeah, I mean, to kind of wrap this up, I mean, this is essentially what I'm describing is basically essentially like how I was able to build up a lot of collaboration for a lot of the projects I was doing at Mercedes, you know. obviously we did design work too, but by leading with principles, it basically helped me do my work better, and it helped communicate the rationale a lot more effectively, because people sort of understood the design from its first principles.
And I think there can be different sets of principles also. Like,
yeah,
there can be your project principles, and you know, you might have an ethics line item there, but hopefully you've also established principles as in a team or product level as well, where, you know, hopefully, you know, accessibility and maybe ethics are part of those just bigger principles for the whole entire project or product, so that, you know, for your specific project, that's not like a special, you know, thing that needs to happen in your project. It's just something that needs to happen overall. So kind of having those two sets together really will help you to establish that, you know, we are all on the same team around, you know, these ethical considerations. And, you know, and then of course that carries more weight when you're talking about a certain design decision to say, hey, you know, we need to invest in this, you know, the leadership approved these principles up here. Yeah. And that can really help you leverage that as you move forward.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that was kind of the idea, was taking sort of big ethical questions and boiling them down into things that people can actually do, right? Like, I know, I'm sure you've seen this, John, where, like, you know, a company has its, like, values somewhere, you know, on a poster hanging up. And it's like, the problem I've always had with that is, like, how do I turn any of that stuff into something that, you know, is actually usable on a daily basis, right? You know, the companies often have, like, values like integrity and this and that, but I don't feel like people generally, like, know what to do with that stuff. And this is where I think principles, you know, become a really important, important part of the process. Product design in general, it's a very powerful medium that can actually have a very profound influence on people. And we see it all the time, every single day. You know, as I mentioned, you know, social media, for example, you know, it has a very strong influence on people. And so, you know, specifically talking about ethics and getting it into principles that you can use in your practice is incredibly important, so that basically you start projects and you do your work that is intentionally meant to not cause harm. Right? Read John's book. You can hear all, you know, you can read all kinds of different stories of where this kind of failed. Ethics is a huge topic in general. But using principles, as we've said, is a way to guide yourself through the process and just start your projects right. So that's it. That's today's show.
Good stuff. Yeah, I think this is really good. I mean, I love how you've tied in principles and ethics together, because that is really a powerful mechanism to influence your team and your product to have the right level of ethics. And yeah, you mentioned that sometimes, you know, companies will have these, you know, ethics, you know, things built into their principles that, or, you know, values, you know, is usually what it ends up being. And they won't actually implement them, but that's leverage for you as a designer who's ethical and wants to create ethical products. That's leverage for you to say, okay, my principle that I've created for this project maps to this value that we have as a company. And that just gives you, you know, additional leverage, even if it has in the past been kind of just lip service.
Yeah. Sometimes it is.
Fight the good fight. You got this.
So, yeah, that's about it for today's show. Thank you for joining us. You can hear all, you know, this episode. You can find this episode and all of our previous episodes, which actually, you know, sort of indirectly refer to a lot of what we talked about today. You can find it on the web at designreviewpodcast.com.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of great reviews coming in recently, especially now that we're back. Please keep them coming in. We literally thrive on those type of comments, just hearing that what we're doing here is helping you out in the real world. Please take some time. iTunes is a great place for that. But you can also just share with us on social media or the website as well.
Let's read a couple of reviews. Let me pull it up here.
And you can find us on social media. The podcast handle on Twitter is dr_podcast. And I'm at DesignUXUI.
I am at MachineHuman. So yeah, we got a couple of new reviews. So first one from Janny_Z. They gave us 5 stars. Thank you, Janny. That was really kind of you.
Woohoo!
They write, so excited to see you back. Always love your podcast and have checked on multiple times to see when you'll have a new one. Well, Janny, there's a new one right now.
Yeah, and we're swinging them out every other week as we've been. And so hopefully we have a lot more actually planned for the next month. So just keep coming back, Janny. Thank you so much.
Yeah. There's another one here from... I don't know. It's not. I don't know if that's somebody's name. IFGYV. They also gave us 5 stars. They write, so excited you guys are back. This podcast helped coach me into my first job in UX.
Congratulations.
It's awesome. I'm so excited you guys are back. This is by far the best design podcast out there. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for saying that. Yeah, this stuff really, we thrive on it. So appreciate it.
Yeah. I mentioned this in the last episode, but you can also go on to a website I made called officehoursproject.com. You can basically sign up for mentorship. There's a bunch of people that I have spoken to about being mentors. They're all really great people.
Great URL, by the way. That's a nice, solid URL.
Thanks. And yeah, like, you know, it ranges from, you know, Lucas, who's a director, all the way down to Lisa, who's just kind of an associate designer. There's no reason to only talk to like senior manager level people. You can learn a lot from talking to anybody in the design industry. So I welcome you to go in there and sign up for a time if you ever have any questions or need some help with design stuff.
That is such a good point. I mean, talking to peers or someone who's just that next short level that you're looking for to gain your next, you know, goal. Finding somebody in that situation is sometimes better than meeting the person who's, you know, 20 years ahead of, yeah, of where you want to be, because it's so fresh for them. Like, all those learnings are so relevant and fresh for them. They can really help you with the right information. And also, hire Chris. Chris is available on the market. So jump on that. I mean, he's designed voice UI for Mercedes. He's done a lot of really good stuff. Of course, the podcast. So jump on that and reach out to him on LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, cool.
And that's the show. Thanks, everyone, for giving us your time. We will see you next episode in 2 weeks. And until then, see you later.
Bye.